Today on the Inside Flap.
But definitely not the career I had envisioned for myself when I was in college. I was like, I'm going to work in the industry. I'm going to be a development executive in Los Angeles.
That's
funny. And then I was like 22, sweating in like the studio above Penn Station, like setting up coffee.
Yes.
But hopefully I'll find something else to have a little bit more balance, because I was like, I'm handling it. And my husband was like, this is not sustainable.
You know, I kind of resent that nickname, really.
That's funny. My maiden name is Lee.
Yes, what did you get?
So I got Bruce. In high school, I could walk by and I'd hear Bruce.
Someone always has to lean over and say, they're not booing. They're saying,
exactly,
Bruce.
They're not booing.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my left is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And leaning into his webcam camera, about 3 miles down the road, is Andrew Dowd. Andrew, what's going on?
Excelsior.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And welcome to
The Inside Flap.
This is our weekly podcast in which we recommend books, interview authors, and generally, what do we do? What do we do around here? We raise hell? Do we raise Cain?
No, we definitely don't.
Shenanigans, chicanery, whatever the hell we do, this is where we do it. So we appreciate you guys joining in. This is episode number, what episode are we on? Anybody know?
69. No jokes, please.
Save your
Thank
jokes
you. For, Thank you. Just putting that out there.
Okay. Episode number 69. Mm-hmm. And our special guest today, Rachel Harrison. We had a chance to talk to her, Laura and I did, the other day about her exciting new book, The Return. We'll talk about that in a little bit, and we'll have that conversation for you in a little bit. Our show today is brought to you by the good people, the very, very fine people at IndieBound. So, you know, make sure you're out there celebrating and supporting independent bookstores. Everybody needs your support nowadays. Independent bookstores do as well. They are a dying breed. So if you could, if you're going to buy a book, you know, go through our website, theinsideflap.com. Click on the link to IndieBound. It won't cost you anything extra, but it will help to support the show.
Yeah, and you can find, what I like is you can find, if you don't know already, you can find out what bookstore is near you that's independent. And it'll...
That's right, yep.
Most of them right now, if they're still open, have...
deals.
Are open for curbside pickup, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep, so you can just pull right up, have them toss the book in the back, and get home.
Oh, Andrew,
take a flamethrower to it, or however you want to sterilize that book.
And our
in your house,
our vet is doing curbside pickup with pets, which I think is kind of fun.
That's right. Drop them off.
Drop them off.
They'll come right out to your car.
You can the pet.
Give them the boot kick to the flank. Kick them out there. They'll pick them up and take them right in.
Yeah.
So
we actually found a vet that does home visits. Because we got the new kittens.
Okay. And
Wait a second, Andrew.
Wait,
you know you're not supposed to have people in your home.
That's the exact opposite. Wait a second. We're trying to inform people on good tactics. What do you mean? Your vet is coming into your house?
Well, it is essentially not necessarily. Like, shows up in a van and does like the can take like the kitten and stuff and do everything out in the van and then.
Oh, a mobile, like back. a mobile vet.
Because our
roving
our
vet mobile office, vet, I see.
Yeah, our vet office, for the most part, pretty much shut down.
Oh,
and
ours
so we've
is
got
not.
New kittens, mm-hmm. and they need their shots and everything else. And it's like, what are you going to do?
Oh, okay. Well, that's good then.
That's true. A mobile van is good, and I like how our vet just rolled with the punches. Although he is the last hand I shook was our vet.
That's right. And don't forget, he is the one who told you that this is a hoax by the Chinese.
I felt like when he said that, he was hopeful. He sounded hopeful to me. Like, maybe this is...
I see. That was early on.
Early on. Now, I believe he has accepted it, and they will come out and pick up your pet for you and bring it in. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, several counties in the area around Denver, including ours, Arapahoe County, has now put us on a stay-at-home order. You know, this is the next level up from where we were, and where we were was kind of a, hey guys, listen, I'm gonna need you to go ahead and, you know, if you don't mind, just go ahead and kind of hang out in your house, if you don't mind, kind of stay away from the crowds. And now we got the stay-at-home order, I guess, basically, because, you know, I mean, we had one job. And I wouldn't even call it a job, you know. I would call it a luxury. Guys, here's what I need you to do. I need you to stay at home. I want you to go ahead and sit on your couch, you know, Netflix, and chill it up. That's it. That's all we had to do.
It's true.
But we couldn't handle that, so now we got the old stay-in-place order. Park shutting down. Picnic areas shut. Basketball rims being wrapped in plastic.
I saw
pickleball nets being taken down.
Is that what they're doing?
Yes. I walked up to the park. I've been walking more, which is really one of the only benefits of the pandemic, is I've been walking almost 4 miles every day.
A lot of exercise.
And I saw a sad mom with her kids trying to get into the skate park, which was chained shut, and talking to a sad couple with a basketball under their arm because the basketball nets had plastic garbage bags all over them. I was like, I guess you guys don't read the news. I didn't say that.
No idea what's going on. I went for a...
I don't think they do.
Yeah, I went for a trail run the other day, and I saw nine bro dogs.
Well, they were under the 10. At one point, we had congregate with more than 10.
I guess they were under 10. But there were nine of them all together hiking, right one behind another, asking me about the trail conditions. I was like, trail conditions? How about the stay-at-home conditions? How about those conditions? I mean, it's just like my students, you know. So in my auditorium, you know, where sometimes I have class, we have it in the auditorium there. Mm-hmm. So above the auditorium, we have catwalks. And one thing the kids just love to do, absolutely love to do, they will find a way, like rats in Andrew's backyard, they will find a way up to these catwalks. You know, if I leave the equipment door in the back open, they'll sneak in there. There's a secret staircase to get to
them. It's like little kids near a pool. When you don't want them to get near the pool, they're like drawn to it like a magnet.
Yes, I found kids, they've grabbed my 30-foot extension ladder and put it over the caged-in lower section of the staircase just to get up, to climb up to these catwalks. They get up there
and they like to
Snapchat it up there, take selfies.
That is so stressful.
And yell down to people. It's nonstop. It's nonstop and constantly harassing me. When can we go up there? When can we go up there? Then the second I say, guys, today we're going up to the catwalks. We're going to work on some lights up there. Mm-hmm. And then I get this. Yeah, you know, I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and
really funny.
Work on my profile pic for my
Instagram. There is something with that, isn't there?
I don't understand what it is. It's just like the fact that
when you tell somebody not to do something,
as soon as you tell them,
it's most people's human instinct to want to do that.
Right. It becomes there's no fun anymore. It's not, and it's the same thing with the lockdown. You tell people to stay at home. It's just the last thing they want to do. They're out picnicking in large quantities.
That's true.
They're playing pickleball with 25 of their closest senior friends.
This is all true.
It's just out of control. All we had to do was stay at home. That's it.
True.
And not get in the crowds. We could go out.
Yeah.
Just stay away from crowds. No, now we've got an order to stay at home.
From Dad.
Yeah.
From i.e. Governor Polis.
Governor Polis. Dad. Dad. Guys, listen.
I got to tell you, now that I think about it, he did the dad move earlier where he's like, now I'm not going to give an order out because I trust you enough that I don't think you're going to do it.
Right.
And then now he's had to give the stay-at-home order.
Now we've got the order.
We lost his trust. We lost Dad's trust. It is true, though, Andrew. Like, when you think about with your kids, too, I'm sure there's things you don't want them to go near or whatever, and they just
It's like that toy that they want, and then as soon as you buy them the toy, it or sits it's in the corner like of the family room.
Danger. If there's a whiff of danger, even if they're not aware of it.
The catwalks.
They like to get as close to that as they possibly can.
Interesting. I had to discipline my 8-year-old today.
Oh, no. What happened?
And I had him write the same phrase about 50 times.
Oh, no.
Oh, the old school, the Simpsons old school. Punishment. I like that.
Yeah. And there was indeed a Simpsons ref. So he's like, I can't do this. It's like, well, it's on every episode of The Simpsons. So.
That's right. What did you have him write?
And I basically had him write, I will take care. And this came down to he wasn't taking care of something. And that was the point is to get him to understand you really need to take care of your stuff, take care of other people's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You need to take care.
Yeah. That's hard for someone like him who's so exuberant and excited about things, probably.
Yeah, he's over the top with
I hear them in the background, Andrew.
That's Mary-Kate, actually.
That's Mary-Kate.
It's Mary-Kate.
Letting Peter know to take care.
and working from home.
Yeah.
It's the conference calls and stuff. There's always interesting, like, I had a dog. My dog was, like, dreaming. And, you know, the dogs make those weird noises?
Yes.
You know, it's like, try and explain that on a conference call.
We had right before we're recording this podcast here on Friday afternoon, right before we did this, I had our first school-wide conference call scheduled to start at 3 o'clock. And it was 3:15 before our principal could figure out how, and you could hear the text voice coming over, explaining to her how to show the PowerPoint and her microphone was muted, and then she couldn't figure out how to see everybody or how to hear. Oh, it was 15 solid minutes.
Oh, that's really funny.
50 of us sitting there waiting for her to get the meeting going and underway. Yeah, but I know some people are staying at home because I see them on my Facebook feed, and it seems to me they're most. I wish I could say they were blogging and talking about and posting about books they were reading, but all I see a lot of jigsaw puzzling and a lot of Lego sets being put together. Oh,
I've seen that too. Hmm.
It seems like every Star Wars spaceship out there is a Lego kit.
I bet there's
made
a shortage.
It. There must be.
I bet there is.
I bet there is.
Yeah,
Andrew, you get into the Legos. Or jigsaw puzzles?
We do have a jigsaw puzzle on the table, like a 1,500-piece one that's we've been working on for a week.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say we're about halfway done, but it is it is a very difficult puzzle.
I'm the only one in this family that enjoys doing a jigsaw puzzle.
Once every 2 years, we'll get one.
The thing
one.
Is, I'm not a person who's ever going to sit down by myself and do a jigsaw puzzle. It's the fun is for me would be working with other people, but Dave and Sylvia couldn't care less.
We get together, we get all the border set, and then the easy pieces together, and then we kind of find other things to do.
You guys find other things to do.
And it sits around for a couple of weeks while you
bitterly.
Complain. Can I get a little help over here with
That's
this?
That's true. Oh, Andrew, we had an exciting thing happen in our household. You would have thought, like, we're on the Little House on the Prairie. And like Ma and Pa had ordered, I don't know, like a Sears Roebuck catalog or something super exciting. We had an Amazon delivery. And this shows you how nerdy we are as a family because we got so excited. It was like Christmas Day for a deluxe Scrabble set. two trombone music books and a 24-pack of bubbly sparkling water. And that, like, rocked this family's boat this week. That's how nerdy.
Yeah, boy!
Nerdy, nerdy, nerdy we are. Yeah.
Yeah, I think our big shipments this week is we got a shipment of tea from Teavana. And that was one of the highlights of our...
I know. It's weird, too. Like, when you get those and you're like, what is this? Oh, this is so exciting. And then you realize, like, I would never have been this excited normally. So it's kind of, like, that's another nice thing, I suppose, is little things like that.
You can appreciate the little
things.
You
just took for granted before that are just so exciting right now.
Those trombone books, though. I mean, we were playing Dolly Parton's 9 to 5, all kinds of movie
themes.
That's
when I took my 4-mile walk.
That's right. Oh, hey, you know, what are you trying to say?
Wait a second. Yeah. And then have you guys been eating? Have you, Andrew, have you been comfort eating? Because there's been a lot of comfort eating over here.
Oh, there's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
You know, especially for me late in the afternoon or the evening.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. It's a weak spot. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've tried to be healthy. I've had like some stuffed grape leaves and you know, some fresh olives and things like that. But we are all out of those now. So
that's your comfort food then, stuffed grape leaves, huh?
Interesting.
Hmm. Oh, I love stuffed grape leaves. I love olives too.
You like the salty.
You know, I just really can never find, like when I lived in Europe, I used to get at the farmer's market twice a week. I used to get these great fresh olives and these great fresh stuffed grape leaves. And I've never found any here in the States that are anywhere near as good as what I used to get.
Yeah.
Well, I engaged in a little comfort eating myself. I kind of went the opposite route. I went with the sweet route.
Dave's now, sweet. He's got the sweet tooth.
I noticed in the cupboard, I found some old boxes of pudding, some French vanilla pudding. And I made myself a bowl of French vanilla pudding, the whole box. I made the whole box with the intent of, you know, having that to nibble on for the next 3 or 4 days. Started eating, well, it set up very quickly, very nicely, whisked it together with some, you know, 2 cups of whole milk, and then you got to, and you vigorously whisk for 2 minutes, and you can watch this pudding mixture kind of set and solidify, and then I'm digging in there with the serving spoon. I find myself eating with a serving spoon, and I go put it back in the fridge, and then it just caught, and then before you knew it, the entire box of pudding was gone.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess you could say you were really putting it away.
Putting it away. Yeah, that's right. Laura, what about you? Any comfort food?
You know, like Andrew, I lean towards the salty. So I did dive into, and like Andrew said, my weak time of the day. I'm very healthy in the morning, very healthy for lunch. My week time's around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, somewhere right before, you know, you want to end your work day and start thinking about supper. And I ate a lot of ranch ruffled chips.
Oh, yeah. We did have those.
Like so many.
The bag of ruffled
and
chips.
And I ate them in a way I don't normally eat food this way. I just kind of ate robotically. I think just to make myself feel
one
better.
One after another,
shoving them in, not really thinking about anything in particular. Maybe perhaps looking at like a CNN website or New York Times and just like reading and just eating chips. And then I felt so sick afterward.
Yeah. Now the majority of my pudding was spent eating right out of the serving bowl, standing in the middle of the kitchen, eating with the serving spoon. Same deal.
Repetitively. It's repetitive.
After another. It was a taste. You know,
it's like, it's we're doing repetitive eating right now.
Repetitive eating. That's what
it is. And it, unfortunately, it is a little bit soothing. You know what I mean? There's like a little bit of a self-soothing mechanism going on there.
Something about it, yeah.
And it's something I don't normally do.
Normally eat this way. I guess this is what happens when there is a emergency going on.
I guess so. Now I found out how I'm going to behave.
That's right.
Thank goodness I have more time to walk now, because I don't know what would happen if I was self-soothing eating and then combine that with just sitting all day. I'd be in big trouble.
That's right. Andrew, everything else working out for you?
Everybody's getting on each other's nerves.
Oh.
In the house, you mean?
Or at work.
Well, and it's like, okay, let's just separate you guys. And, you know, I work at home, so I'm sitting at my desk, and at night I finish doing my work. Then it seems like I go to bed and I wake up, and I'm right back at work again. So it's like...
You don't get any time to yourself.
Don't really have separation.
I see what you mean, yeah. Because it's right there. It's right there.
Work in my personal life. And it's not like I'm working all night long, because I'm not.
Well, I got to tell you, Andrew, I work from home and I run my own business and there is no separation at all for me.
That's true.
And there are no boundaries, and unless you set them, there aren't. And it's so hard. And that's been honestly the hardest challenge just for me personally as a small business owner, because... You know, if I don't answer that on a weekend or whatever, I think, well, I'm the only one who's going to be able to do this. I don't have anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes a cycle that isn't healthy. And I think I feel for you because that is, it's a hard part and it's not healthy.
Yeah. So it's you know, the mental aspect of this mm-hmm. is, you know, I mean, that definitely is something to deal with, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I honestly, that's a weird thing because, you know, people have always said, well, why do you like pandemic books so much? And this is before we had one. And it was right. like, well, I want a break. Like I'm connected to my work life 24/7. I wake up, I think about it, I do it, I go to bed, I'm thinking about it. Like I don't have really a separation from it because it's just me. And I always thought, well, when there's a pandemic or something like that happened, I'll have a break. And I got to say, I don't have a break yet.
No, it still hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay. I also want to quickly add, because I'm sure I will have a break, mm-hmm. but I don't have one yet.
Well, I'm about to find out in a week when the kids come back, or I guess they're already there, but when we start having remote learning and distance learning and what that's going to look like. So,
oh, yeah.
It'll be interesting.
That's true. You'll have that experience as well.
Yep.
That's interesting.
All right, well, let's dive right in and get to our guest. Rachel Harrison is from New Jersey, lived in Brooklyn, and just as a few days ago, is now a resident of Rochester, New York. She received her bachelor's in writing for film and television from Emerson College, and The Return is her first novel. Now, Laura read this book. You love this book?
Yeah, it was a great book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so The Return by Rachel Harrison. This is horror, and it is horror that would pass the Bechdel test.
Ooh.
It's almost entirely about women, specifically women's friendships. This is a story of a group of four young women. One woman, Julie, goes missing while she's out hiking by herself. Never hike by yourself.
No.
Women. In Acadia National Park. So 2 years pass. Her friends even have a funeral for her during this time. So one day, 2 years later, Julie shows up out of the blue, claiming to have no memory of where she's been, what has happened to her. Little strange. No one can figure it out. She seems unharmed. The friends decide to have a weekend together, and they book rooms at a kooky boutique hotel in the mountains that Rachel Harrison actually describes this hotel.
Oh, yeah. We have a great conversation
wonderfully.
About that hotel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Things start to get really weird because Julie doesn't seem like she's really Julie anymore. And this is when you start to get really creeped out. This book is supernatural horror. Mm. It's about friendships changing, and it's an excellent debut novel. So I think Rachel Harrison has a great career ahead of her as a novelist. I'm excited about her feminist bent paired with her weird bent, and I mean that in the best way possible.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to reading more by her.
All right, excellent. And we had a great conversation, and here it is for you right now.
I'm your girl, you're my girl, we're your girls. Won't you know that we love you?
Are you currently in Brooklyn right now?
So I was supposed to move at the end of April, and we called last Monday to be like, hey, is everything going to be all right? And they were like, no.
Oh.
So we moved last Wednesday. We had to pack up our stuff in 48 hours and ship out, but we're happy now. We're in Rochester, New York, so a little less populous and bigger place.
Yeah. Rochester's a great place. Dave's sister used to live
there. That's right. My sister used to live there. We would go and visit. Real nice place.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to be here. And more space and
yes.
less people. Perfect time. We made the right call.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yep.
So I'm a big horror fan, and I loved this all-female cast for your horror novel, The Return. It was fantastic. I stayed up late reading it. It hit me right around the time the pandemic was really starting. And I was able to, it actually was fortuitous because I was able to focus on your book I have not been able to focus on many books, actually.
Yes.
So this is a book about a young woman named Julie who goes missing. And she returns 2 years later, claiming to have no idea where she was, what happened. So this is horrific enough. But her friends don't think that the person that returned is really Julie. What inspired this book?
So I set out to write a book about, like an honest book about friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like a lot of this was like right off the heels of like the whole like girl gang movement.
Oh yeah,
which is great. Like I like, but I feel like there's not a lot of there wasn't a lot of room for like reality in that kind of world.
Like, there isn't, is there? Yeah,
we love and support each other. Like my friends and I all love and support each other, but there's it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like,
no,
there are relationships. Every relationship has issues, and I felt like in the media and in all media, it was kind of just glossed over, where it's kind of like a side of feminism that hadn't been covered, where it's like, yeah, we love and support each other, but it shouldn't be at all costs. Like, we should be able to have real, honest conversations and have issues and work through them the same way you would in, like, a romantic relationship or a relationship with, you know, siblings or something like that. So really, that's, like, why I set out to write this book. And also, like, I had friendships that kind of fell apart in my life. And, like, there was no, like, I didn't know how to mourn those relationships. When you go through a breakup, it's like, all right, you got your ice cream. You got like, your sad movies. You got, like, you can, like, listen to Adele and hug a pillow and cry. But, like, for friendships, it's kind of like, I felt like there was a lot of shame. Like, I felt really ashamed that those relationships fell apart and that I couldn't keep them together. And, like, I've had friends change, and it's scary because you're like, I love you and we have a history together, but, like, you're not the same person. Like, how did this happen? Can this still work? Can we still maintain a relationship? Just kind of all those factors were why I wrote the book. And then I think horror was the perfect medium because there's no... For me, it's like the two most powerful emotions are love and fear. And fear is universal. And I think a lot of what causes tension and problems in relationships, any relationships and friendship, is fear. Fear that you're going to lose somebody. Fear that they're changing. Fear that you're changing. Or fear that they don't love you as much as you love them. Or you're the odd one out in the group. So that's kind of where the genre came in. And I'm just a huge horror fan. I love the genre. Everything I write is dark. Like, what could be better than writing like monsters? Like, really?
That's true.
Truly, it's a gift.
That is true.
I think the speaking of ice cream, that's the biggest fear around here is not having enough ice cream in the freezer. I had to put in another online delivery. What is your favorite flavor for, you know, breakup ice cream?
Well, we just got, so because we're now in Rochester, I got to get Wegmans brand ice cream.
Oh, yes, the Wegmans up there.
Wegmans
brand.
I'm in heaven. We got Wegmans cookie dough, and it's, like, so delicious.
Really?
I'm, like, texting my friends, like, oh, my God, this is the best ice cream I've ever had. So if anybody has access to a Wegmans and you need some ice cream, highly recommend the cookie dough. I'm sure all the other flavors are excellent, too, because Wegmans brand is just the best.
Pretty strong, yes.
But, yes.
I forgot about the
Wegmans are
cookie
no joke.
Dough, though. I forgot about cookie dough. Yeah, that takes me back to being a teenager, and I just would get cookie dough.
You could get lost inside of a Wegmans, though.
Yeah, the friendship thing definitely resonates with me. I mean, I probably don't know a woman out there who hasn't had friendships, you know, dissolve or just crumble apart. And it is painful. And I've had one as an adult woman. And it's something I think about fairly frequently, actually. And it's painful to think about. And you're right. There is a like a shame there. Like, maybe I did something wrong. I should have tried harder. And you do show that really well. With your main character trying really hard to get back to Julie, even though Julie's changed, quite literally changed. And I also like, so that you had a friendship of four women and it was beautiful and you really could have a career writing women's fiction if you wanted to. And I loved how you talked about that they were so close, such great friends, but they all said, we don't talk about anything deep. We're kind of surface. But I actually thought that maybe they were selling themselves short. Do you think that women have a tendency to surface gloss? Because I don't know. I feel like my female friendships are fairly intense.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think for me, throughout the course of my 20s, I turned 30 last August.
Congratulations.
Your 20s are such a time of radical change and your lives progress at all different times. And I think, like, also Instagram came out when we were in our 20s. So a lot of people would just like post pictures of everything that looked good. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, I feel terrible. Like I'm depressed. I'm not working the job I want to be working. Mm-hmm. I'm broke. Like this is not the way I pictured my life going. And then I'd see my friends and they'd seem like they were doing much better than me. So like we could have some honest conversations and we did have like I could talk to some of them about problems, but there's like a pressure to keep a certain like veneer up that you're doing okay, even if you're not doing okay.
Yeah.
Because it feels shameful to be like, my life's a friggin' mess.
Yeah. And it, yeah.
So I think it's gotten much better mm-hmm. like as we've gotten older.
Yeah.
But it's also like weird, like your friends marry people that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like they meet people on their own.
I know. How dare
and then
they?
You're like, you're marrying somebody. I have no idea who this person is.
Yeah.
But there's just like a lot of weird, like you can be really close with somebody and there can also be a lot left unsaid.
That's true.
And so I think that's kind of what I like wanted to touch on in the book where it's like, you could be like, you're the person who knows me the best. And my bond to you is probably stronger than any other human being.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's stuff about me that you don't know. Yeah. And that like, and I think, you know, with Elise, there was a lot that she was ashamed of and held back. And it caused a lot of tension. And I think throughout the course of the book, the friends kind of have a little bit more, like there's a moment with May late in the mm-hmm. book where May kind of is like, you think that my life is this way, but I actually feel this way.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of true to my personal experience where like throughout the course of, you know, as we were transforming and as certain things happened, we were able to be a little bit more honest and about the reality of our lives
mm-hmm.
without fear or like shame.
Yeah, that's interesting too. It's interesting for me as I'm older than you. I'm not going to celebrate my birthday like you just did. But I did not grow up in the age of Instagram. And, you know, you do wonder how that would affect a young person because it is debilitating. Instagram is ridiculous sometimes. And then, you know, I don't know if maybe Brené Brown, her work on vulnerability helped. I feel like it did help some because then all of a sudden I started seeing women being more vulnerable and opening up. But even then, it still felt calculated. Like I'm going to share something vulnerable about me, but it makes me still look good.
So,
your book really touched on all that. And I love that about horror, how horror does reflect basic human things that we're most scared of. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, and so I'm an interior designer, and I was absolutely thrilled by your bonkers, completely insane, I loved them interiors that you described. And I want to say thank you so much for paying attention to that. I paid attention as a reader. I sat up. I loved them. I thought the interiors could be considered a character. They were that vivid for me. What inspired these interiors?
So I grew up watching the old HGTV with my mom. when I used to go trick or treating, I would like peek my head into people's houses and be like, "Nice ceiling medallion."
Oh yeah,
crown molding. I see. Like I was that like weird child.
That's awesome.
With interior design. Yeah. There's definitely like anything I write is going to be like describe like the wallpaper.
Love that. I love that.
But I was inspired by the Madonna Inn in California.
Oh, I don't know that one.
And it's like fabulous and like Hollywoodish glamour.
Yes.
And, I couldn't go because like I can't just like pick up and get on a plane and go anywhere I want to go.
Not yet. Maybe
my life where I'm like that place looks cool and then just hop on a jet. So I kind of used the hotel's inspiration and like kept a bunch of my own imagination into it in terms of like the rooms in the Red Honey are super super themed where it's like the jungle room and there's a waterfall and, like, I really went nuts with it which in probably an unrealistic way
but it worked but, it's a horror book you can do that
come on
that's right
if there's some supernatural stuff then I can have a waterfall in my house.
Absolutely. And then the bookcase all of that I mean it was awesome.
I really went wild with it. But if you like Google the Madonna Inn, which I highly recommend,
okay.
It's super cool. You'll see like certain, like the carpet and the dining room those are pretty heavily inspired.
Oh, that's cool.
It's, I put my own twist on it, but like, you can see that they're definitely shades of the Madonna.
I like
in
that.
The Red Honey.
I like that. I also like, you know, you had outfit details too. And I liked, you know, just the little detail of the cat eye glasses. Don't want to give anything away, but I liked, yeah. I liked that because I could picture it so well. And I'm wearing cat eye glasses right now. So.
Do you think if this book was about four guy friends, it'd be a lot shorter?
I don't know, and that's why it's about women. I like.
There you
I
go.
Think I don't. I think men also have complicated friendships, and probably
not
don't
so
talk
much
about things. But, probably not as much in terms of like the like deep intricacies,
right?
But I hope. I mean, it just because it's a book about women doesn't mean men can't read it. And
no, absolutely not.
Like,
yeah, no,
really
definitely yeah, not. Yeah.
Like I've lost friends too, or like things have happened to me, and yeah. And it's still a genre at the end of the day, so maybe it'll scare you if you can't.
For sure,
yeah, it's definitely not so. Just for women. This book, yeah, but it was refreshing to read a horror book where a woman wasn't being like sexually stalked. So,
yeah,
that was great.
Yeah, that was a no go for me. It's,
yeah,
this book passes the Bechdel test with flying colors.
Yeah, it really did. Actually, I was I should have mentioned that to you. Darn it.
No, that's okay.
Now, Julie, she goes missing while hiking alone in Acadia. Beautiful park, by the way. You don't hike alone, do you?
Oh, heck no. Okay. No way. That book was like a big, like, I was going to like write in it, like the forward, like,
disclaimer.
Sign it. Don't hike alone, Rachel. but yeah, do not recommend that. It's a terrible idea. Yeah, you can go to the park alone, but like keep your phone with you at all times. And,
right.
Like,
well, you know, I think actually nowadays we are supposed to do everything alone. So maybe want to stick a caveat on that.
If you're going to go for a hike now, hike alone, just tell them, just like link your phone. Like you can do like a.
There you go.
Link
oh,
your phone
yeah.
To somebody and show them where you're going.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Do that. But yes. You're going to hike with somebody 6 feet apart.
This is not a book to read while you're camping, also, I would say.
No. And I like wouldn't write a sequel because like that, I think this one wraps up pretty nicely.
Oh, yeah.
But I like to think of somebody like hiking and coming across some of the things that I touch on in the book. That's a cool thing to think about.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it really is. And actually, I have the book right here, too. And your cover is gorgeous, by the way. You must have, were you
I
thrilled?
I got so lucky. That was the first. Yeah. They showed it to me. And that's how, I believe her name's Katie Anderson. It says in the flap. Brilliant. Genius.
Yep.
First go at it.
Wow.
I was like, nailed it.
You did get
it's
lucky.
Awesome. I'm
yeah.
so happy with it. Especially nice now because, you know, people keep like, are mostly seeing it online. Mm-hmm. It's really helpful to have an eye-catching cover.
Oh, it definitely pops. Yeah.
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 Yeah, for sure. It's a tough time. I imagine it must be disappointing to put a book out during a pandemic. And I feel bad about that, but it's a beautiful book and it really does. I mean, I stopped thinking about the pandemic while I was reading it. So it is a gift in a way.
That's the highest compliment
to yourself.
Like it's a little sad that I can't like go to a bookstore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But last night my husband was like, for launch, he was like, let's get dressed up and like celebrate at home, just the two of us. And I was like, okay, like, yeah, I was kind of like, I don't know, part of me felt a little like cruddy, but I was like, all right.
Yeah.
And then we got dressed up, we ordered takeout that they left in the lobby. he sat on the couch and I like went to go sit on the couch and he had done like a surprise Zoom chat for me with like my amazing agent and my brilliant editor, like my
amazing
team at Berkeley.
Oh, that's awesome.
Publicist, marketing people, and then my family and my friends and everyone at the Friedrich agency. So it was just like it was a really, really nice surprise. And we talked for like over an hour and a half until it was just me and my friends left on the chat. And so that was really, really special. And it like was an amazing day. It felt like my birthday.
That's great.
And so it's a bummer that I couldn't have that experience, but like I had the best day. And one of my best friends, Courtney, she put it really eloquently. She said, it's the relentless pursuit of joy which I thought was really amazing. Like, even in these hard times, like, people will relentlessly pursue joy. And it was a very joyous day. So,
yeah,
that's good. It was good.
That's good.
And I think that is such a uniquely singular experience that years from now, you're going to look back on that and it's going to be even more special than it could have been in many ways. So that's great that he
did
that.
I think, you know, it's a tough time and many more people are struggling way worse than I could ever imagine. And I feel for those people. And I think for me, it's just a good time to take my temperature and be like, you need to like be thankful for things and like appreciate your health and all of the things that you have. I think everybody's kind of having moments like that where you're like,
we are,
you know, like even like when you receive a book to just be like, this book is so special. I'm so happy to be holding this book or to listen to an audio book. Like,
absolutely.
It's good to find, in times like these, it's good to find magic where you can find it. You
know? For sure. For sure. You also have, I just turned the book over. You have some great blurbs on the back too.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I got so lucky. I read them sometimes. It's like a form of pinching myself.
Yeah. We are friends with, Alma Katsu, and she's awesome. And, that's a good one.
She's great. That's really good awesome. One.
So when I got the, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I'm hunger. And then I got to read The Deep early. Which
We did too.
I got an arc and that book is just,
I know.
Whew, yeah. It's so atmospheric and dreamy, and that's a good escape from reality book too.
You know it is.
So like,
yeah.
Go and set sail on another disaster. I have
Exactly.
It's the best disaster you could ever.
That's true. It's complete escape. Complete escape.
That is a great one. Now, listen, speaking of escapisms, it sounds like you worked on a television game show. What was that like?
Oh yeah.
What?
So, I went to school for screenwriting. Mm-hmm.
That translates exactly very well to game show.
So I was working in. I couldn't crack it in LA. I'm originally from Jersey, so it was hard to kind of be on the other side of the country.
It's weird out there.
21 years old. So I came back to New York, and pretty much the only job in the industry I could get was I was working as a PA on the Newlywed Game, which actually, honestly,
that sounds fun.
I highly recommend working in TV as your first job because everything else after that becomes easy. Like, you can't say no to anything when you're in TV.
No.
The show must go on.
Interesting.
And it was very like, it was like 15-hour days and you're like lifting things and you just, someone tells you to do something, you just have to do it. There's no excuses.
Yeah.
So, it was a great experience and a great first job. I think it set me up really well for success and everything that came next. But definitely not the career I had envisioned for myself when I was in college. I was like, I'm going to work in the industry. I'm going to be a development executive in Los Angeles.
That's
and then
funny.
I was like 22 sweating in like the studio above Penn Station, like lifting, like setting up coffee.
Yes.
Like, whoa.
Yeah, like this is not quite.
Who was the host of that version of the Newlywed Game?
Sherry Shepherd.
Oh,
very lovely person. Yeah.
Oh, she's funny.
She's very lovely.
She's very funny.
Yeah, it was great. It was interesting. The times I could watch. I don't recommend anyone going on this show, but I feel like it's like a recipe for disaster. Like, I don't even know. Like, I've been with my husband for 7 years. Like, if we went on it, I don't know what would happen.
Yeah.
Like, What if you love somebody and they don't know anything about you?
I know, that's a good point. There's a horror right there. A horror book right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah.
That's a book I wouldn't even want to write. No. Some horror is too scary for me.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of those, though, with women not knowing their husband types of books out there, for sure.
That's true. Where it's just like...
Yeah.
He was wrong, but the Newlywed Game is more like you didn't know what his favorite food was.
Yeah. That's pretty good. I'll take
that.
The
books we're talking about are like, I didn't know that he murdered people. I'd rather not know his favorite dressing. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, it's ranch. I didn't know. I thought it was blue cheese. Yeah. So I see you have a cat named Gatsby.
Yes.
How's he doing with the move?
Yeah.
Was that a seminal book for you growing up?
Gatsby's actually a lady.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Gatsby.
No, how are you supposed to know?
Sure.
But when I first saw her, I thought she was a boy. So I was like, it's going to be Gatsby. And I was like, oh, that's fine.
Yeah,
Gatsby's
it is.
The last name.
Yeah, it's fine.
But I mean, in high school, I was a big Gatsby. I mean, I was the angstiest teenager ever, so of course I loved Great Gatsby.
Yeah, I did too. I read it over and over.
The Bell Jar. And,
oh yeah.
You know, Plath. Catcher in the Rye. Any teenage angst book, forget it.
your name on it.
and Gatsby is very. My cat is a personality, big diva. She had to be in my bio and in my dedication, or else I'd pay for it.
Well, you probably spent a lot of time when you're writing the book. So you're working, I think you're working full time now. Is that right? And you wrote a book. How did you manage that out of curiosity?
I get up very early in the morning.
Wow. It's hard.
So yeah, I work a 9-to-5, at an office for the time being, corporate America, work for the man.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'd get up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning and write. And then when I picked up Momentum on the return, and I was kind of like, ooh, this is going to be good, I would write at night as well. So 8 to 9. I'm a very regimented person. So I need my schedule.
That's good.
I need my routine. I'm a Virgo, so it's every day has to be the same. It was a lot, but I like having something else. Even if I don't work at the office anymore, I would try and find another job to do, because it feels like a lot of pressure to just
to write. Writing.
I would like to have more, editing the book while I was working full time. Mm-hmm. That was a lot.
Oh.
Because, I don't like, obviously, I just mentioned, I don't like to have homework. I don't like to procrastinate. I like to do everything. So knowing that I was at work while I had edits to do, that was torture for me. But hopefully I'll find something else to have a little bit more balance, because I was I'm handling it. And my husband was like, this is not sustainable. So hopefully I can find something a little bit more part-time.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see. Hopefully.
I've been
very lucky to be able to publish a book and to be able to do what I love.
Yeah.
I also like to volunteer more when you work full time, and then also are writing. Oh. I don't have so much time to volunteer. So now that I'm in Rochester and a new city, I'm hoping to, once this hopefully settles down soon, everybody's feeling better, I hope to maybe be able to get more involved in the community and find a part-time gig.
Yeah, that's great. I hope that for you, because I'd love, you've got some great horror books coming, or whatever. You don't have to write horror. As I said, you could write, women's fiction if you wanted to.
Do you feel drawn? Do you feel drawn to continuing to go down that horror route and continue to write horror?
Yeah, so I would say I'm very committed to horror, but I would consider myself a speculative fiction writer. So little sci-fi elements, dark fantasy, things like that. I just kind of pull elements of that into my work. It'll always be dark fiction. I highly doubt I'll ever write a rom-com. If it's a rom-com, there's going to be...
It'll be twisted.
Aliens.
Okay.
So I'm just...
Yeah.
I write a lot of dark fiction. And I write short stories as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
Two short stories published in the past 2 months.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
Congratulations.
One is called Goblin. It was published at Electric Lit. And it's kind of a Black Mirror-esque story. Something people are into. And then I wrote a story called Good Bones up at Guernica, which is a little bit... very speculative, a little bit of horror element, but just kind of weird and dark.
That sounds great. I'll check that out. Love Electric Lit.
Sounds great. Well, listen, Rachel, we want to thank you so much for spending some time with us here. You're stuck at home anyway, so it's good to have someone to talk to. Congratulations on the new book, The Return. Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good, Rachel. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Absolutely loved it.
It was great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you. Have a good rest of your day and stay safe.
You too.
Yep, stay
you
safe.
You too.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. The Inside Flap. All right, that was a great talk. It was just having a nice conversation with someone who just happened
really
to write
liked
a book.
Her. Yeah, she really was great. Liked her. Yeah.
For sure. All right, well, let's open it up. It's time to get to it.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
We'll start with
Laura Medicus. All right, so I have a book called The Indigo Girl by Natasha Boyd. This is historical fiction. It's set in 1740s South Carolina, And I have had a craving specifically, this sounds so strange for me to say this, but I have, for pre-colonial historical fiction. I know.
Wow,
right?
That's very specific.
It was a specific craving. So I actually sought this book out. I looked it up before the pandemic. I got on hold for it in the library kind of thing. And I had it sent to me. And I got it just in time before they closed the libraries down.
Now, this is not to be confused with the Indigo Girls. How long till my
soul gets it right? That's true. Right? It is not to be confused with the Indigo Girls. I forgot about
them. You forgot about the Indigo Girls?
I totally
really?
Did.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Closer I am to
find. Closer I am to find.
Yeah. All right.
Galileo.
Okay, now. I'm going to have Indigo Girls in my head.
Now I'm going to have to get one of their songs up.
That's so funny. I'll have to look into why they called themselves the Indigo Girls.
Yeah, that's true.
So I recently got into my family tree, and I traced my family back.
Now, when you say that, you don't mean literally. Like, you didn't climb up that tree.
No.
Your family's backyard.
But I spent some time looking at it, thinking about it, researching it, and traced them back to 1600s colonial America, specifically Charlestown. Charlestown is actually now Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
But, and it's very close to where this book is set. So it really like perked my ears up because I'd been wanting to read something like this. This book was a delight to read. And I think that reading historical fiction right now during this pandemic is comforting because I was reminded that my ancestors, you know, our ancestors, they lived through and survived very hard times.
That's true.
You know, they got through things because they had no choice, not because, you know, people always say, oh, it's the greatest generation. Yeah, maybe, but maybe we can be as well. When you don't have a choice but to go through it,
right?
You know, you do have a choice in how to handle it, though. So, you know, some people handle things with grace and humor. Others people like blunt force and just tireless work. Others try to pretend that nothing's wrong. And then like some of us just complain bitterly all the way through it.
Right, sure.
Until we get through it. But, you know, hard times have always been with us as humans and they always will. And I think that's the beautiful thing about reading historical fiction right now is it really, for me, it was comforting to remember because we've had just such a nice period of prosperity and relative ease, you know, that I've lived through. And just to have, you know, to realize and to read about your ancestors and what they had to go through is just comforting.
Things in perspective. Yeah.
Really does. So this book is about a young woman named Eliza Lucas. She's put in charge of her father's plantation when he leaves for Antigua for military reasons that were kind of interesting. So she's a smart, capable person who would love nothing more than make her plantation extremely profitable. She's a mind for business, but she's also a woman at a time when women were not permitted to own property. So that's a huge problem right there.
Wow, that is. Yeah.
Her mother keeps trying to bring suitors out to the house to marry her off, and Eliza keeps running them off. In the meantime, she decides she wants to try to grow indigo. When she hears how much the French are paying right now for indigo. Indigo is a really interesting plant. I didn't know anything about it going into this. I didn't know our country grew indigo. There's a lot of fascinating information about this plant. It's kind of a mysterious plant. There's nothing blue about indigo. Even the flowers aren't blue. So that's kind of interesting. And there's a little bit of botany in this book. I really enjoyed that in this book. So you have a young woman attempting to make indigo dye when no one else around her is growing this. Everyone else in South Carolina at this time seemed like they were growing rice, which I didn't know that they were doing.
Not tobacco?
There's some tobacco that might have been further north in Virginia, especially.
Oh, okay.
But for some reason in South Carolina, it was rice.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And she has slaves on this plantation because you can't run anything like this. You know, in the South without them, mm-hmm. seems like. And that's just the way they had set things up. And also, you know, as she's growing older, she's 16 or 17 when the book opens. Her eyes are really opening to the reality of slaves. And at this time, it was illegal in South Carolina to teach a slave how to write. They were afraid of a slave rebellion. Mm-hmm. And there's a great storyline in this book about Eliza and her father's slaves. And then you also have the problem that women had during this time period. You really couldn't do much in life without a husband. So there's that pressure to find a husband. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're stuck and you're kind of a burden to your father, is how it's presented to you as a
really?
Young person.
I didn't think about that,
if
but
you're
I guess
not,
that would be
if
the
you're
case,
not married.
Right?
Yeah. So this book is based on a real woman named Eliza Lucas, who lived from 1722 to 1793 in colonial South Carolina. And it includes real excerpts from letters she wrote to her father in Antigua and to her friends.
Oh, wow.
It's fantastic. It took me out of worrying about her current situation. Hmm. And at the end of the book, the author goes into a lot of detail about the real Eliza. And I just enjoyed that so much. It was absolutely fantastic. It's called The Indigo Girl by Natasha Boyd.
Hmm.
Very good.
All right. It sounds excellent. And yeah, because all I know about indigo is that it's the color in between, you know, Roy G. Biv. That's
yeah.
my only connection with indigo.
Oh, gotcha.
I guess I knew it was a dye, but that's about it.
Yeah, very expensive dye. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a hard process to make.
And so, Laura, do you think with the stay at home order, I need to make sure I get
that's
my
right, yes. stay. I thought it was.
It
a
is
shelter
different.
In place.
Shelter in place. You're not supposed to go out at all. Stay at home.
Okay,
you can.
All right.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
The stay-at-home order. But do you feel as if you could relate more to living in the 1700s?
I totally did. Mm. I mean, when I read about her life, I mean, they were on this plantation. They were not in Charlestown, the actual town. And they didn't get mail. When someone would bring them mail on horseback, it was a really big deal. They didn't have people often at their house. It was a lonely life. I mean, if you think about it, they're not sitting at home watching Netflix. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's nothing much to do, especially if you're female.
I guess they could play cards about it, huh?
Yeah, I guess
playing,
so.
Right?
Yeah, they don't talk about that as much. Well, they played music. I mean, there's only so much of that stuff you can do.
Rosin up the bow. Yeah. All right, well, in any case, it sounds like a great book, and that's recommended by...
Laura Medicus.
Okay, so my book this week, now listen, as you guys know, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I'm really, really just sad. There's a lot of things to be sad about. One thing to be sad about is Andrew yanking his headphones off and jerking around his microphone and making a bunch of noise.
I was pulling my glasses off. I was pulling my glasses off and my headset and everything came with it.
God, he tried to take his glasses off and the whole headset came off. And if you guys, this should be a video podcast.
It should be a video podcast right there.
I wonder if I could take a screen capture.
No, don't take a screen capture.
All right. Andrew is in the process of growing a beard there's a transition phase. You know, you go from having like stubble, like a 2 to 3 day, even up to a week long growth where it's kind of manly and looks cool.
Uh-huh.
And then you have, of course, the full
beard. He's got the Homer Simpson look.
He's
right
got
now.
This in between.
Yeah, it's in between.
It's going to look good, but right now it's a ragtag affair, and he's not doing himself any favors with his hair. That's an unruly mop atop his head.
At least he's got it, I guess.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Thank you, Dave.
Yes.
That's right.
I give you a...
so, you know, my in-laws My in-laws for years are always asking me, they're like, are you dye your hair? Andrew, you must dye your hair because they're about 10 years younger than me and they started growing gray already. and so they're like, you know, like you can tell us if you're dyeing your hair.
It's funny because you can see the gray. Yeah, there's no gray in your hair, but you can see it in your beard. And I have the same thing too. You get more gray in the beard than you do in the hair.
I have a similar issue.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, you're growing a beard, are you, Laura?
Just a little one. You know, a little goatee. Okay, a little soul patch.
She's hopping on board.
A little soul patch.
Yeah.
No, I've had gray in the beard for probably 20-some years. Right? It's just for whatever reason, it's always there.
Huh. All right, well...
it's a fascinating discussion, guys.
Anyway, sorry, I got off track there.
Baseball.
All right, baseball. I'm a big baseball fan.
You are sad.
You can go back, you can go back to episode 67, and you can listen to my top 10 baseball books there. And I've been missing baseball. This is a great time of year. Spring, spring's eternal. Hope springs eternal in the springtime for every baseball fan. Everybody thinks it's the one time of year where it's spring training and every team has a shot to win it all, even if they don't. That's what a fan tells themselves. So I miss it. So I wanted to find a book with a little baseball in it. And I heard about this book and I was like, aha, here's a book. And the name of the book is Double Wide, written by Leo W. Banks. Now, here's a book that not only helps fill the baseball void in my life, it also satiates my love for crime fiction, as this book won, not just crime fiction either, but Western crime fiction. For this won the 2017 Best Western Crime Novel from True West Magazine. So I was really excited to read this book, and it lived up to my expectations. Now, one thing that separates baseball from all other sports is nicknames. Baseball, for whatever reason, just lends itself to great nicknames. You know, you guys, I guess they got a lot of spare time on their hands to dole out these nicknames, whatever. I don't know, but there are some great ones. You know, Andrew, I don't know if you remember former Baltimore Oriole manager Mike Hargrove. They called him, his nickname was the Human Rain Delay. You got Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Wait, of course. Well, yes. Why did they call him the Human Rain Delay?
Oh, because, well, when he was a player in the batter's box, he had a lot of time in between pitches to adjust his uniform, adjust his batting gloves, really just spend a lot of time in the batter's box in between pitches.
So fussing therefore, over fussing, himself.
Yes, exactly. So he was the Human Rain Delay. Of course, everybody knows Shoeless Joe Jackson, Pee Wee Reese, you got Walt No Neck Williams, you got Twinkle Toes Selkirk.
Why did he have that nickname?
High Pockets Kelly.
Why did
everybody? Because he would run. This is the guy, actually, he predated, he was the guy who played right before Babe Ruth.
Uh-huh.
And when he ran, he would run on his, on his tiptoes. So they called him George Selkirk. Yeah, George, a Twinkle Toes Selkirk.
I'm going to have to look that guy up.
Of course, everybody remembers High Pockets Kelly from back in the day. And I love that nickname. But my favorite, and I used to have this guy's baseball card, and he had this big Fu Manchu mustache.
Uh-huh.
His name was Al Herbowski, but they called him the Mad Hungarian.
Oh, that's good.
Just a great nickname. Of course, you know, my nickname is Med. A lot of people call me Med for, as my name is.
Dave Medicus.
But back in the day, you know, I've been called, I think mainly middle school is when I was called Medical Case. Of course, that led to Mental Case. Metamucus, which led to mucus for one very long summer in my youth. Lately, I've had a group of students led by Malik. Oh, no. Shout out to Malik. For some reason, they started. This is one of those ironic names, like you would call the fat guy Tiny, you know, the big guy Tiny.
Yeah, or Peaches or something like that.
Yeah, well, they started calling me Meaty Ass for some reason. So Malik would
of
call
all
me,
the things that I thought would come out of your mouth,
but
it
Malik,
wasn't that.
He comes into the room every
day.
That's
so weird.
I miss Malik, man. Hopefully, we'll get to see him soon. But he would come into the room and say, for some reason, he'd pretend to be me. He'd say, okay, guys, I'm your sub for today. I'm Mr. Meaty Ass. But a lot of fun. Andrew, did you have any nicknames growing up? Well, I know one nickname.
None. None that I'm willing to admit to.
Now, Andrew, when we were building swimming pools together, the guy that we worked for started calling him Dilbert.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because they had the guy. What was the guy? What was that from? It was predated the Dilbert comic strip.
Huh.
Yeah, so what it came from is, there used to be a Navy cartoons that, you know, that was kind of like the Navy's version of Beetle Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
This character was called Dilbert, and he would always do things incorrectly. So that's why I get the nickname. But you know, and I guess it's kind of ironic because, you know, I'm actually very good at getting things done and doing them expertly and with very little waste, and so
hashtag
I don't know if it's as a result
not humble
of that nickname, but you know, I kind of resent that nickname, really.
That's funny. My maiden name is Lee.
Yes, what did you get?
So I got Bruce.
Oh,
so
no.
In high school, I could walk by and I'd hear Bruce.
Oh, man, really?
Yeah, and then I also got Brock.
Oh, broccoli.
Yes, Brock was a super fun one as well. Oh, yeah. And I'd hear Brock shouted at me in the halls.
I don't know about that one.
By.
I might try to get Sylvia to bring back Bruce.
Bruce was a fun one because when you draw
sound.
The ooze out, it sounds kind of funny.
Yeah, the ooh.
It was like a low rumble of Bruce. goose.
And someone always has to lean over and say, they're not booing. They're saying
exactly,
goose.
They're not booing. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So this is a great book for names. This book, going back to Double Wide, you've got, so some of the, he has a great job of giving the characters names. So you got one guy named the agent, his name is Max Mayflower. You've got a gangster named Roscoe Rincon. You got a dancer, an exotic dancer. Her name is Bunny Slippers. I like that one.
That's funny.
You got a TV reporter, a sexy TV reporter named Roxanne Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got our narrator. Now, this guy, he's a former baseball player extraordinaire. They call him Whip Stark. I call him Whip because back in the day, his fastball was so fast. And I got a yeah. little,
how fast was it, Dave?
His fastball was so fast. He could throw that speedball fire, make you look like a fool. That it would actually give the batter whiplash. That's how fast the old speedball came down the plate.
Nice.
Of course, sadly, Whip's career was cut short due to a shoulder injury. He turned to drugs and ended up spending some time in a Mexican prison.
Wow.
Which, I don't know, for some reason sounds a lot worse. Nothing against Mexico, but just if you say he spent time in prison, it sounds bad enough. But then when you say he spent time in a Mexican prison,
doesn't sound good.
It really sounds even worse for whatever reason.
I actually, it doesn't to me because unfortunately I pictured the Three Amigos movie. So I picture you know.
Okay. My little buttercup has the sweetest smile.
Those guys in the prison.
Right. Kind of more of a
slapstick. Yeah.
Well, at least he didn't spend time in a Turkish prison.
There, that's the one you want to steer clear of.
Turkish prison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, when the book opens, our guy Whip Stark, he's living in a trailer park in the middle of a desert in Tucson, Arizona. Shout out to my parents who are down there right now.
Now, David.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Hey, Dad.
Enjoying the warm weather.
Yeah, they're down there in Tucson, along with a lot of cacti and other prickly and colorful characters. Now, the MacGuffin in this book is that his former catcher's severed hand ends up being left in a box on his doorstop.
Whoops.
So now he's thrust into the role of playing amateur detective as he sets about finding out what happened to his old friend. So you don't need to know a lot about baseball to enjoy this novel, but if you have a love for the game, it will enhance your reading pleasure. Just the fact you know any baseball fan knows how close a pitcher is to their catcher. Mm-hmm. So with the fact that he sees his catcher's severed hand, then you know now he's got to go do something about it. He's got to find out exactly what happened.
Very intimate and
you might
odd.
Wonder how he would recognize the hand. It was by a little tattoo that was on the hand.
Oh.
By the way.
Hmm.
In case you were
I thought maybe their relationship was that close that he could recognize his catcher.
Well, you know, a pitcher
but
does
it's in a catcher's mitt, so.
One is, but you know, the other isn't. The other so they do isn't. Spend a lot of time sticking down signals, you know.
Oh, that's true.
In fact, catchers will go so far as to paint their fingernails brightly colored colors in order so that the pitcher can see them with a wrap tape around them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then the Astros will devise some kind of scheme to figure it out. And
to pound
bang
on something.
On a trash can.
Light up a light bulb. Get a candle going and
destroy
right field.
Baseball's lucky, actually, that they're not playing right now, in particular the Houston Astros, because they would be getting booed out of their minds. This might actually, this is going to, in the long run, help them out.
I'm looking forward to seeing them getting booed, though.
I know. I was really looking forward to seeing them getting booed.
So why would the Houston Astros be getting booed?
Well, because they basically cheated their way to a World Series title, cheated their way to the World Series last year. You can do a YouTube search on it. But they had a system down where it got so specific that they actually had signals, allegedly. One thing that's not alleged is that they had a guy looking at a camera, and he was standing in the clubhouse ramp. He would see the catcher put down the signal, and they figure out what pitch was coming. And right after the catcher put down the signal, they had a guy bang on a trash can, and you could hear this. You go on a YouTube and look it up. You can hear on the telecast somebody hitting a trash can. They bang once, and I think it was like once if it's going to be a fastball, twice if it's going to be a curveball, or maybe not at all if it's going to be curveball, something like that. But they had this highly sophisticated system down pat. And they basically cheated their way to a world championship 2 years ago and got all the way to the World Series this year.
And by highly sophisticated, you mean beautifully simple. Didn't know you were listening to a sports podcast, did you?
All right, so now he's got to find out what happened to his catcher, right? Whip suspects it had something to do with the drug cartel that was operating out of an old mine in a mountain nearby named Paradise Mountain. Now, along the way, he gets a sidekick, the aforementioned Roxanne Santa Cruz, the television reporter, as they untangle a web of deceit that has ensnared not just his old catcher, but his catcher's brother, who's his hotshot, who's his up-and-coming pitcher, who is so audacious that even his best pitch has a nickname for the way it dances when he throws it. Adding to the intrigue is a spicy subplot involving a Mexican plant that features prominently, and the whole book comes together at the end in a really, really exciting way. You also get this shady agent who's promoting this young pitcher. And I did not see the ending coming. It was really a pleasant surprise to see the twist in it. But it was a very exciting the way it all came together. Not unlike The Natural.
Is that what this music's from?
Yes, this is the best baseball score ever, yes, from The Natural.
Who did this? Do you know?
Randy Newman.
Oh, really?
Randy Newman did the score for this movie, yes.
Love him.
This is an ingenious way to tie it all in and bring it back to baseball. This guy, Banks, Leo W. Banks, a great writer with an ear for crackling old school private eye dialogue that is funny, is peppered with humor and flavor. And good news, the second one in the series just came out. It's called Champagne Cowboys, and I will be reading that one as well.
Cool.
This book is called Double Wide by Leo W. Banks.
Sounds great.
Yep, check that one out. It's a lot of fun. Andrew.
So this week I found another Michael G. Manning book.
Oh,
Michael
yes.
G. Manning.
The Turtle Guy.
Turtle Guy.
Yeah, and so the book I reviewed is called The Choice of Magic. It is the first book in the Art of the Adept series. And so far, Michael has written two books in the series. Now, this book is a scant 626 pages.
Wow.
That's a lot of words.
And this is, you know, this is a book that is in the genre of, you know, young boy or young child meets experienced, wizard. And basically, you know, wants to go from not knowing magic to basically being an experienced, you know, magic user.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's a fun trope.
Yeah, and you know, and I love this series of book. And I think for me, this is really one of my, let's say, types of comfort reading.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
that when the world has gone to hell in a handbasket, right. There's nothing better than diving into a good fantasy novel where a young boy is basically coming of age and learning to discover that, you know, he does indeed have talent and that there is more to life than wandering through the woods. And so the main character of the book is, his name is Will, you know, short for William, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he is raised by his mother. And his mother is basically, I guess you call her a herbologist. She is a healer in a very small town, and they live outside the town in a small house.
So all three of us now, that's our tie-in. Our books have plants featured in them.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was your plant? Yeah.
It was a Mexican plant with a secret ingredient in it.
Oh,
it was
really?
An agave plant.
Okay,
And so Will and his mother, and he's doing fine, wondering what is his future going to be like, because he does not have a dad. He is a bastard son.
They always are.
They always are.
Yep. And he doesn't really know who his father is, but he has a great relationship with his mother, and he learns a lot from her. And so, of course, one of the pivotal scenes in the book is a lord is visiting his mother, and there are two young girls, his age, who basically are in the carriage. And so while the lord is spending time with his mom, the girls sneak out of the carriage, and so he decides to follow them. And one of the girls is about to get bitten by a viper, And so he steps in and saves her from getting bit by this snake. But he ends up getting bit by the snake, and he almost ends up dying. So the Lord and the ladies, they go on their way, and they leave this young boy to his fate. And so the mother calls in a guy, that an old hermit, who ends up being a wizard. And he ends up being really the last wizard. Hmm. And so the wizard ends up saving the boy. And the wizard also realizes that, you know, this boy has some magical talent. More than likely, I'm going to need to train him.
Hmm.
And then what further cements Will's fate, a young boy is injured, and his wound is turned septic. And so he shows up at his mom's cottage looking to be healed. And it turns out that the young boy is far too good that he cannot be saved by traditional magic. And so, of course, Will's mom is not there to do the healing by traditional means. So Will decides that he can start to sense inside this boy's body the right and the wrong. And he starts to discover his magic powers, and he ends up healing the boy. And so because he has healed the boy, he has now revealed that he has magic. And so the old man has to take him on as an apprentice, because magicians are feared. And if you are a magician that is not taught in school, basically you are considered a wild magician, and mm-hmm. that is obviously illegal.
Dangerous, yeah.
And so
a wild magician, so that was my old DJ name. Hi, everybody, as a wild magician.
I am sure. And I would think wild magician would be more appropriate.
That's true, yeah.
And so there's mystery around Will and his mom. There's mystery around this old hermit. And he learns that the hermit's name is called Aragorn, and they tell him, do not use that name at all, because if anybody hears that name, not only will they come and destroy our cottage, but they will destroy the entire village because of who Aragorn is. And so Aragorn, it turns out that he is the last wizard. So the choice of magic, the title really comes from the fact that, you know, Will has a choice in terms of what type of a magician or what type of magic he wants to use.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the main three types of magicians are, there's warlocks. Warlocks end up making deals, selling basically deals over people's soul or people's blood or things like that. So the warlocks make pacts with demons and things like that at the expense of others or the expense of their own soul. And those are considered warlocks, so obviously not considered, the good guys in this series.
Got and then shady characters there.
Yep. And then there are sorcerers, and sorcerers by Will's grandfather. So the world in general considers sorcerers good. And if you want to be a magician, you really need to become a sorcerer. But Will's grandfather considers sorcerers evil. He has actually fought a war to stop sorcerers and to basically kill them. And the reason he considers sorcerers evil is because sorcerers' source of magic comes from the spirits that are trapped in these magical devices. And they are using these trapped souls or these trapped spirits in order to complete magic. And so, Aragorn, who actually turns out to be Will's grandfather, many generations removed, basically sees this as a form of slavery. And, you know, and you can see Will, and not only is Will growing up in this book, but you also get to see him explore all of these different magical world and these different types of magics and these different types of magicians. And you see him come to the realization of, you know, yes, sorcerers are evil, and yes, warlocks are evil. Now, there's other magical creatures as well. There are demons. There are fairies.
You've got to have demons and fairies. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Demigods. There are trolls.
Ooh, demigods.
And one popular use of tropus is to keep the deer out of Aragorn's garden.
That's what you do, right, Andrew?
The tropus.
Yeah.
Control the rats.
Sprinkle around.
Yeah, I can only find tropus. Some.
Yeah.
If I could only find that. And so there's colorful language in this book. So, you know, Will is a colorful character. He's a young boy that anybody can relate to. Now, Aragorn, he is grumpy. You know, he is intelligent. He is set in his ways. He is outspoken. And, you know, this book is definitely, let's just say there's lots of four-letter words in this book. And, you know, Aragorn likes to string together explicatives. I guess that's one of his skills, is to use colorful language to describe things. And so, you know, this book is, Will is also, he heads for danger. When he sees danger, he heads for it. He is brave. He is strong-willed. He is somebody that puts his friends and families first. And he is not willing to, he's also willing to do what it takes to protect his friends and family. So if it's going to put himself in danger in order to save his family and his friends, he is basically going to do those things. And so even as a young boy, he puts his life on the line to save his grandfather, to save his mother, to save his cousins. And so, of course, this world is you know, this idyllic world is basically turned on its head because one nation decides to invade. And so, of course, war breaks out, and Will, of course, gets caught in the middle. And so he ends up enlisting in the military, and you know, using his special talents to make a difference. But you know, this is just a fantastic book. This is probably some of the best writing that Michael G. Manning has done. And the only sad part is he's only finished two books in the series. And so I've spent some late nights, you know, reading on my phone under the covers
with your beard.
But the book is The Choice of Magic by Michael G. Manning, and it is the first book in the Art of the Adept series.
All right, very good. And that is recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
It sounds like a good book, Andrew, and it sounds like good comfort food for right now.
Yeah, sounds like just what you would want.
Just a distraction.
Just what you want. Now I finished two of the books in the series. What I need to work to find another book.
Oh, man. Michael, keep writing.
Well, maybe I could recommend an audio book for you.
Audiobook of the week.
Got one right here. It's called The Bone House. It is written by Brian Freeman, and this is read by Joe Barrett. Joe Barrett is a guy I've read who just pops up every once in a while in my audiobooks. You know, I look for books first. There are a couple of narrators I specifically will seek out, maybe your J.D. Jacksons, but Joe Barrett is a guy that you can rely on every time. Now, The Bone House is a great mystery, one of those books with multiple swirling mysteries that unravel as you listen. You've got potentially unreliable narrators and a good old-fashioned, old-school cop with a troubled past.
Another trope.
That's right. Yeah. Who goes by the name of Cab Bolton. Now, the mystery starts out with a girl found dead on a beach. The main suspect, now I'm sad to say, the main suspect is a teacher.
Oh.
This guy, Mark, is a teacher. Mark Bradley, he's a high school teacher from Wisconsin. Now, this guy was accused of having an affair with one of his students and lost his job. His wife, who also teaches at this school, well, she believes his story that he didn't have anything to do with. She sticks by him, and now all of a sudden, both of them are ostracized by the community. Even though she continues to teach at the school, he has lost his job. Because really, no one believes Mark. He's trying to say, I did not have anything to do with this girl, but...
I had a book where that was similar. Heather Chavez's No Bad Deed. Yeah. No Good Deed, sorry.
All right. So now as a reader, it becomes interesting because you're like, well, do I take his side?
I know. It's interesting.
He's the narrator here or one of the narrators.
Did this happen? Did it not?
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
It's a good one.
It really is. That's part of the thing. One of the things that I enjoyed about it.
So now we have smash cut to the two of them, Mark and his wife. They're on vacation in Florida. They go down there because his wife, now she was the, where she worked with some of the dance team, and now the dance team has a competition down in Florida. So they're staying at this hotel, and this is where this girl is found all of a sudden, a different girl is found murdered on the beach, and Mark now is a suspect because of his past and also because he was seen talking to this girl on the beach. Mm. This is one of those deals where things start out bad for this guy, Mark, and they turn even uglier and get worse from there. Whew. As far as these accusations go. And we as a listener want to believe he's innocent, but
we don't know.
Is he? You know, and then we find out that it turns out this murdered girl, well, she was a witness to a crime from long ago in Wisconsin, and now all of a sudden the suspects come flying at you fast and furious. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is The Bone House by Brian Freeman, read by Joe Barrett.
Two-story house loomed across the way, sheltered by oak trees down a long driveway. Glory ran again, but slowed to a nervous walk when she got close. The chipped paint and hanging shutters gave her a creepy feeling, and when the wind blew, the house sighed. She'd asked her mother once if the Bone House was haunted. Her mother had gotten a strange look on her face and said that there were no such things as ghosts or monsters, just unhappy people. Glory crept to the garage, which was in the midst of a grassy field.
Now, there's Joe Barrett. You can hear he's got a great voice for audiobook. Mm-hmm. This is fast-paced. This is engaging. You got a large cast of unique individual characters. And one of those books that really just keeps you guessing over and over. Like, you have no idea where it's going to go, especially with this incident in the past with the fire and the girl who saw it. And then the ending of the climax is pulse-pounding and really one of those ones that you don't want to stop listening to and you have to find out how it's going to end. I really enjoyed it. It's The Bone House by Brian Freeman. And that is your
audiobook of the week.
So check it out. All right, that's our show for this week. We want to say thank you to Rachel Harrison for hopping on board. Check out her new book, The Return. Go to our website, theinsideflap.com. Click on through to our IndieBound link. We'd appreciate it. Follow us on Facebook, social media, where else? Twitter,
Instagram
mm-hmm. all that stuff, at The Inside Flap. Check that out. We appreciate you listening, and we'll see you later on.
Adios.
Children's literature is one of my joys, and it's also my mental comfort food. Gretchen Rubin. I'm actually very good at getting things done and doing them expertly.